welcome to The Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm Jan McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice, and I'm very excited to have you all here. We are broadcasting live from SkidRowStudios.com. We are real radio on the internet, and we're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we're here to talk about the life of an entrepreneur, and I'm very excited to have Karen McGill in our studio. She's the founder and creator of Pro Cakes, and we get to hear her story and find out a little bit more about her journey and how she got started. So welcome, Karen.
Yay, thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And I also want to let our listeners know that if you'd like to call in and ask questions of myself or Karen, we'd love to hear from you. And the number is 1-800-893-9562. So Karen and I go back kind of a ways, but Karen, why don't you tell us just a little bit about where you're from, the name of your company is Pro Cakes, and what that actually is, and let's just see what led you from the beginning to here.
Wow, okay, so we have an hour, right?
Yeah.
So I'm originally from Toronto, but I came to California originally on a corporate path. I was recruited to Silicon Valley, and I was there for a couple of years, but my mom passed away, and that was a huge sort of catalyst in my life to change. And she passed away, I believe, too young. And the message that really left in my heart was that life is short and precious, and you have to do what makes you happy. So I ended up leaving my corporate life behind, and I actually ended up in India doing a yoga teacher training, assuming that I was going to take an entrepreneurial path in yoga. But I ended up going to India and finding that I really didn't want to teach yoga. I thought it was the most boring thing to teach in the world, even though I did love it. So back in the U.S., I ended up getting married and went back to school and got a master's degree. And over that time, I also had a business, Ladies Who Launch, which is where our paths crossed. And I did that for a couple of years. And then once I finished my master's, I ended up back in corporate. And I was in corporate again for another year. And I think I ended up back in corporate in a padded cubicle wondering how I got back there. After all that I had done to get out of corporate, I had ended up back there in a different capacity, using my interest and my passion in psychology and behavior change. But I was still doing a corporate job. So I lasted a year. And then I left that job and kind of as a side project or goal, big hairy goal as I call it, I did a bodybuilding competition where I was preparing for one. It was a 6-month process of heavy duty weightlifting and heavier duty or dieting. That process was a whole new experience for me, something I'd never done before. Being my background athletically has always been as an endurance athlete. So that was an interesting experiment. And bodybuilding is not just about building muscle and creating a physique that you would take to a stage and compete with. It's also about dieting. And dieting is not a very easy thing for me to do. I don't like to do it. I don't like to be hungry. So one of the things that I had been introduced to during that process was protein pancakes. One of my coaches had turned me onto it. And the thing that I loved about these protein pancakes, and I'm typically not like a huge pancake fan, but I was satiated for hours. I would have these for breakfast in the morning. And instead of, as a bodybuilder, you're supposed to have these very small little incremental meals throughout the day, upwards of 6 of them. I would have Pro Cakes in the morning and I would not be hungry till, well past lunch. They were a great combination of proteins, carbs, and fats, and a perfect balance that just kept my blood sugar even and my satiety levels satiated. So as I'm still going through this diet process, I'm not hangry, which is my term for being extremely hungry and extremely angry because I'm extremely hungry. So I thought these were just like the most incredible thing in the world. I thought I had hit gold because nobody likes to be hangry. I'd been making these and I'd been experimenting with them. And for me, although I don't have celiac disease or even a huge gluten sensitivity, I noticed simultaneously as my diet was becoming cleaner and cleaner and I was taking gluten and letting go of my beloved peanut butter and toast in the morning, I found that there was definite beneficial effects of letting go of gluten. My stomach was flatter. Hormonally, I was in a better position. I had more energy, and it also affected my moods and just brain clarity as well. There's a lot of research about the impacts of gluten and even a heavy grain-based diet. So I was focusing on these protein pancakes, but using things like coconut flour and gluten-free flours and almond flour, and trying to find really good blends that tasted good but didn't have gluten or wheat. So I was doing this just for myself as I was preparing for my bodybuilding competition.
Let me interrupt for just a second. So the original protein pancakes that you got turned on to whenever you were doing this bodybuilding did have wheat or did have gluten?
Well, they had the original ones had oat flour, and oat flour is controversial as to whether or not it's a gluten-free flour. And also oat is a grain, and there's a lot of research about how grains are actually very difficult for people to digest,
and
they are so for me. So I was moving away from, because bodybuilding diets is all about oatmeal and egg white. So I was moving away from that to more nutrient-dense ingredients.
I see.
So the bodybuilding competition came and went. It was an interesting experience. I've never been that lean or that hungry in my entire life, but it was a great experience. And over this point, I had also left my corporate career and was planning to do another business, and I was in the research phase of that. And that business never came to fruition, and that's because it was a very logistic-heavy business and something that was going to require a lot of funding and a lot of resources. And really what I was looking for was a business that I was passionate about and that would facilitate the lifestyle I wanted rather than becoming my lifestyle. So I made the conscious choice not to pursue that. And now I was in a place where, okay, I'd left my corporate job and I have put away this idea of this business I was thinking of starting. My husband just said to me one day, we were up at the cabin, we were on our way to get gelato, and he's like, you know, Karen, why don't you do this protein pancakes as business? They're awesome. They're functionally a great product, and they have a lot of benefit, and you love them. You love doing, you love making them. You believe in the product. This is, you know, it's a health-related product, something that's very important to you.
Very much in alignment with who you are.
Right, yeah. Right. So, you know, I was like, maybe I will. So, you know, that where the ball started there. And that was at the beginning of 2013, because I just finished my bodybuilding competition at the end of 2012.
I love what you said in the fact that when you started thinking about a business, and so many entrepreneurs do this, it's like, oh my gosh, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
Yeah.
And they start looking at things maybe from the other side, like what will make money, what will work. And you really took a look at, yes, this is something that I could do, but it doesn't fit within my lifestyle. When you were first looking at the business that you might venture into, it doesn't fit with my lifestyle in terms of time and the amount of capital it would take and the you know, the resources that you'd have to gather in order to launch it. So I love how this idea was just born over breakfast one morning, literally, whenever your husband said, hey, how about this?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because, you know, when I was thinking about the previous business, I knew that a successful image of that business was me in a big warehouse with a lot of, you know, shipping and receiving and a huge staff. And that's just not what I wanted. And although the genre of the business was really truly something that I was passionate about, which was healthy food, it was going to be a subscription box, by the way, just in case anybody's dying to know what that was. It really wasn't as close to the product as I wanted to be. So, you know, when Dean did, my husband, suggest doing this as a business, it really clicked for me because, first of all, I'd been a food blogger for many years. Food is a huge passion of mine. Healthy food is a big passion of mine. Fitness is clearly a big passion of mine. So there was a beautiful synergy there. And in building a food business, there's an intimacy to it because you're creating something based on your values and your beliefs, and other people are eating it. So, you know, there's a nourishing, caring component to it that I really love as well. And it's so creative. It is so creative. So it was really a culmination of all of those things. So it just clicked And I've had many business ideas roll through my head throughout my entire life. But, you know, you kind of have to, the good ideas stick and the bad ones just keep rolling and they stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I like that. So that's a big deal. So now all of a sudden you're, even though you've been a food blogger, being a food blogger and bringing a food product to market is a whole different ballgame.
Very much so.
And you didn't have experience in that. So what was your first thought? I mean, you had the experience of how do I get a corporation, a LLC, deciding those kind of questions, knowing the legalities in terms of just a business. But when you're talking about food, there's a lot of other things to consider. So what did you do? How did you, I mean, you can't just start cooking it in your kitchen and throwing it in a package and selling it necessarily. So what was your next step?
Wow. Yeah. It's interesting with food businesses, and I think that they're very common for people to want to start because very often people have a recipe that they think would be great commercially, and they start going down a path. And once you start knocking on doors in the food industry, you find that a lot of people don't want to pay much attention to you because there's a lot of people knocking on the doors in the industry. So I started knocking on doors and I got a lot of crickets. You know, I talked to food scientists. I talked to universities that had food science programs that worked with small local entrepreneurs. I tried to get a hold of co-packers. I knew I didn't want to be in a commercial kitchen because I didn't see myself in a kitchen so much as I saw myself marketing and branding. That would be my strength that I would bring to this product because I had already, in my mind, come to a certain point with the formulation. So it took a lot of determination, and I think that's the one thing that I would say to anybody who's thinking about starting a food business, that there's not a lot of barrier to entry until you actually start trying to enter the doors. And then there's a lot of people in the food industry that are like, yeah, you and everybody and their grandmother wants to start a food business. Talk to me when you're really serious, when you've got money to show, and you know, you're ready to take the next step. So, and I was ready to take the next step. Maybe didn't have the money to show, but I definitely was ready to take the next step. So I had my own formulation, which was then refined and perfected with a food scientist. I'd worked with somebody here in Southern California just to perfect it. Originally, what I really wanted to do was make a vegan protein pancake, but that was very difficult to do given the macronutrient balance that I was really trying to hit, because for me, the greatest thing about the protein pancakes was the satiety. And in order to have the satiety levels, you need the healthy fats and the protein. And if it's just a very carbohydrate-rich product, then you're not going to get those satiety levels. So I had to move away from the vegan plan and go with something that was vegetarian. And
was it necessary for you to go and get a scientist to do that? I mean, some people do just use their own recipe that they've made up is that something that everybody really needs to go and check with a scientist, just not only with what the ingredients are and be able to speak about those and make sure that you have that? I mean, could you have just used your own recipe and...
Yes and no. You definitely want to work with somebody who, first of all, when you think about shelf life, I have a dry good product, so there's no water content, which makes it really easy for it to be shelf stable for a long period of time. But if you, let's say you're making like a baked cookie or something like that, all of a sudden there's a big game change there. You've got to think about pH balance. You've got to think about water content, you know, shelf stability. All of these things need to be considered. And then you also want to work with somebody who... can, you know, look at an ingredient profile and say, well, this is something that's really hard to source. This is something that's easier. This is really expensive. This you're not going to be able to find in commercial, sizes. So those sort of things you definitely want feedback with, but especially when it comes to the science piece and just, you know, the health and safety of food. So yes, I would
that's
definitely
great information. Yeah.
You would almost definitely need that. But then you also want to convert your recipe, which is, you know, probably half a cup of this and 3 tablespoons of that, to a formulation, which is something that you would then move or pass along to a co-packer. And so a formulation in comparison to a recipe is something that might make a batch of 12, but a formulation is something that's scalable from one single unit to 1,200 units. So it goes from, you know, a cup of this and a teaspoon of that to 12 grams of this, 12 grams of that, which is then a percentage of an overall recipe. You know, everything's Googleable, everything's figure-outable. That's not exactly rocket science. But these are the things that you would probably need help with.
Okay. So you found the scientist, you got the formulations, and you even found co-packers, but there's still a lot to do with that. So how did you come up with your name?
Oh, my husband came up with a name. He's like, you should do this and you should call it Pro-Cakes. Yeah, it was his name. And I found it. I Googled the URL. And
right, keep him.
I know. He's such a keeper, right? It was not a cheap URL. I paid $1,600 just for the name Pro-Cakes because it was considered a quote-unquote premium name.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then I bought all the variations around it, you know, like Pro-Cakes with K instead of C and Pro-Cakes.net and all those other things. But, my husband came up with the name.
That's great. Yeah. So then you did your Google search and you said, okay, I got a great name. Mm-hmm. And then you got the URL. So then you had to get packaging, you had to get your logo, you had to get all of those things in order. And how did you make those decisions?
Well, I really looked at this as a project of viability. And I wanted to make what was called an MVP, which is a minimal viable product, and then take it from there. And if you've ever read The Lean Startup, you would know what an MVP is. And it's usually a concept that's applicable to technology startups. But I also wanted to look at my own startup that way in the food business. I didn't want to invest, you know, a lot of money in custom packaging where I'd have to buy a minimum of 30,000 pieces because you're committed to your recipe then because the ingredient labels and the nutrition labels, and you're committed to all of your claims, and the FDA is making big changes this year around gluten-free and whatnot. So I started off small. And
those are good things to know, that there are options, because when you think about the barriers to entry, anyone who might be coming out with a product, and especially if it's food, you have to think about, do you have to buy the quantities of 100,000, and that's a significant cost. So
it is, and then you're stuck with it. And the thing is, when you get your product out on the market, you're going to understand so much more about it. You're going to get not only customer feedback, which is obviously very important, but you're going to understand sort of the nuances of ingredient sourcing. Like, for example, the second ingredient in my product is organic coconut flour, which comes from the Philippines. But the Philippines had like a huge typhoon last year.
And I happen to have a package of Karen's amazing Pro Cakes, which I had for breakfast this morning. So,
oh, cool. You won't be hungry till dinner.
I'm good to go.
So, you know, when there's this big typhoon in the Philippines, that impacts the flow of coconut products into the U.S. So, and not that I'm going to change that, but it makes you well aware that, oh, you need to be really aware and on top of food sourcing, which is, you know, a whole other ball of wax that I wasn't really aware of. So I did a small batch. I found a local co-packer, a woman-owned business, and they were fantastic. And they were extremely patient and really kind of held my hand through the process, which is what I needed. And they were local, which is what I wanted. And they were people that I could work with and trust, which was so important because co-packing is a very scary, I don't want to say scary. It's a very important relationship. So I found my co-packer, my packaging. I sourced a designer through 99 Designs, or Design 99, is it 99 Designs?
99 Designs, yeah.
She's actually she's Bulgarian, and she is so fantastic. And I love this woman, and we've worked together on a couple of projects now. She's very affordable. I love her style, and she's helped me a lot with my design and branding.
Tell everyone what 99 Designs is.
99 Designs is it's almost like a crowdsourcing for your design work. So let's say that you need a logo or a website or any sort of design. You write out a scope of your project and you put it up on 99design.com, and designers will pitch, and I believe they actually provide sample designs. You get a sense of their style and creativity, which is, of course, what you want most of all. But even before you look at price, you want to make sure that somebody has a creative vision that's very similar to yours.
And you pay like $99, right, to have them, if you like their pitch, then you have them submit something, right, and it's $99 or?
Well, some things are $99, and some things are a little bit more, and some things are, I don't think anything's less, but you can find really good designers in other countries that can give you really quality work. However, the downside of something like that is you're not working with somebody who's familiar with FDA rules about labeling here in the U.S. So you need to know all of those sort of things. And there are a lot of regulations around what you need to put on a label, what needs to appear where. And then you've got to consider, you know, from a retail perspective, what's a retailer going to want? How big is the package going to be? And these are different. These are questions that I didn't even know I had to ask. And but as I went through the process and spoke to different people, I began to learn these things. And I'm sure there's just a million things I still don't know about the food industry. But you don't know what you don't know,
right,
which is why you want to start small and not invest huge amounts as you're getting started.
That's such valuable advice. Mm-hmm. So did you have specifics about how you wanted it packaged and how you wanted the label done and how you wanted your logo and all of that kind of thing?
Yes, because I had in my mind an ideal customer, and I really wanted to appeal to her. Interestingly, I really do feel like my packaging has spoken to that person. Interestingly, as I've kind of started selling, and we've been in business for almost 2 months now.
And you're doing this online?
Well, right now it's online. We are planning on being in retail stores by the end of the year. That is the goal.
And the website is
Procakes.com.
Yeah.
Yes. There you go. And also we sell on Amazon as well. And Amazon's fantastic. Fulfillment by Amazon, I would highly recommend to any entrepreneur. I've come to realize that it's more than just my ideal customer avatar that I had in my mind that appreciates that this product. I was really developing the product for people like me that were athletic and were really concerned about macro balances and getting an appropriate nutrient balance in their diet. And it does appeal to those people. If you're anywhere in the physique world, bodybuilding world, you totally get proteins, carbs and healthy fats. But it's also, it appeals to people that I wasn't expecting, like people that are inspired to live a healthy life, but just aren't ready to have kale smoothies in the morning. You know,
you mean like me, people like
well,
there
me. There you go. You know, it's for people that are really ready to take that step, but don't want to take it to the kale smoothie level quite yet. And ProCakes aren't a kale smoothie. Kale smoothies are great. But they, you know, they do provide a healthy, I don't even want to say alternative. They provide a healthy stepping stone. There's no added sugar in the product. There's absolutely no wheat. It's made with extremely high quality ingredients. And, you know, whey protein is the very first ingredient. And if you look at some other products on the market, they may use product or less expensive or less quality ingredients at the front end, because obviously we know that when you look at an ingredient profile, the very first ingredient is what's you know, the majority of the product is made from. I really wanted to make my product high quality, so I do feel like I'm bringing something to market that isn't quite a kale smoothie. You're still getting that hedonistic value of eating something that you'd think is decadent, but is actually quite good for you and quite nutrient dense.
Yeah, that's huge. That's really huge. And I love it that you created your profile of your ideal customer and really tried to market to that customer with that customer in mind. Mm-hmm. Because whenever you try and expand that, if you're trying to market to everyone, then, you know, you market to no one.
Right.
By focusing on that particular customer, then the benefits kind of spread out. So that's a huge thing, though. You had to get a website built. Mm. You had to get all of the packaging. You had to learn about the food industry in ways that you never even dreamed possible.
Right.
That's not an easy task. I don't know if you had test markets for, you know, does this packaging appeal to you or not? Would you recommend that for people? And then I have another thing that I'll add to that, but there's a lot of
In terms of feedback, I got a lot of feedback on the recipe, and I had people make it. People, I have one friend who, you know, considers herself to be a complete failure in the kitchen. I figured if I could give her a mix that she could make, then it's going to be easy for anybody. And she did have good success with it. So I did have a lot of feedback on the product. And in terms of packaging, I did put it out there quite a bit to get some feedback. But I also took my feedback with a grain of salt. So, like, for example, I took designs that I had originally had sketched out, and I popped them on Facebook to get feedback from my my immediate social group. But I also took that with a grain of salt in the sense that your friends are always going to give you the most positive feedback they possibly can, because they love you and they want you to succeed, and they're not going to be as critical as somebody who perhaps doesn't know you. So I did go out there and look for feedback. But it's interesting, though, just having done my last, my first face-to-face event, getting feedback from people that are just coming up to the booth and looking at the product and holding it in their hand and seeing what their initial reaction is based on looking at the product. Oh, you know, do they notice right off the bat, oh, 20 grams of protein per serving, or, oh, look, it's gluten-free. It's interesting to see what people gather.
Gravitate towards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's really the pancake stack that they gravitate towards.
Yes, the pancake stack is very, very appealing. And I have to say that my pancakes do not come out looking quite this way.
Oh.
But they still taste amazing.
That's important.
So let's talk about how you decided the way you were going to launch. Launching online, going to events, certain events. Recently, you were able to provide your pancake, your pro-cake mix to a group of very select women so that they could try it. I actually really love the single serving packages, mm-hmm. and I'm so happy you sell it that way. Because even though I bought the big bag, and that's easy. I mean, really, it is very easy to mix whenever you think about, like, an egg, some milk, and a cup of, I don't remember exactly, half cup of the pancake mix. It's easy, much easier, like, oh my gosh, this is already measured out for me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really great thing. Like, oh, I can have this, and it's under two, I don't have my glasses on. I think it's under, I didn't really look at what the calories, but it's like under 200 calories, right?
Well, that's the mix itself. You're going to be adding things to it. So it goes a little bit above 200, but not by much.
So basically under like 300
oh, yeah.
or 350.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just easy. I mean, it's easy. It's like, I know I love the single serving package. It's like, in the future, I think I'll buy them all that way.
Good.
But what made you decide all of this? I mean, I'm assuming it was a very conscious decision, like, we'll roll out this first, we'll offer it this way, because not everybody does offer these single packages for their food products. So what made you decide to do that?
Well, first, in terms of the sales strategy, it was doing what you can with what you've got and where you are. So being online was my first point of entry into the market, just because it was the most accessible. And if I had a jam or a mustard, I may not use an online strategy. I might use a farmer's market as my initial go-to-market strategy.
So is that because that shelf life is so limited? And
it's not even that. It's just consumer behavior around how people buy certain things. Like, I don't know about you, but I might not buy something like a regular grocery item online unless it was really special. But I do buy my supplements online. So if I'm buying protein powder or, you know, just regular vitamins or whatever else have you, I always buy them online because you're getting the best price on Amazon all the time. You know, I would never buy a bucket of protein powder at Whole Foods because you're going to pay a lot more. And I do love Whole Foods, mind you.
One day this product will be in Whole Foods.
Sure, sure. So I knew that from a consumer mindset, in terms of my ideal customer, they're quite comfortable buying supplements online. And ProCakes isn't as much of a baking mix as it is a supplement in the form of a baking mix. Because, again, the whey protein being the primary ingredient. So I knew that my go-to-market strategy would work from an online perspective because my consumers were already buying their supplements online. So if I could interrupt that with my own product, that would probably be successful. And also my marketing strategies were such that I was making a direct line of communication to my ideal customer. So our online launch has been very successful, and our Amazon extension of that on Amazon has been successful as well. And, you know, in terms of going into retail stores, that's a huge decision because there's a big piece of that. Not only do you have to create those relationships and get into the stores, then you've got to, you know, maintain those relationships, eventually work with a distributor. And then not just the whole distribution piece, but then following up, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days to get payment. And actually, the last event that I was at, I spoke with a lot of small food entrepreneurs that said that that's like a job in and of itself and a huge struggle just to maintain those relationships with stores. And then once it's on the shelf, you've got to work to get it off the shelf. So there's a huge piece of it's a different animal.
Placement, everything.
Right. And I really want to be sure that I'm ready for that. Because at this point, I'm a solopreneur and it's all me. And I want to make my next steps in the market very, very carefully. So it is on the horizon, but I'm going to do it in a way that I feel will be sustainable for myself and grow the company at a level that I feel comfortable with.
Well, what you've just said is so important because a lot of entrepreneurs, especially, let's just take the food for example, it's like being in Whole Foods is the holy grail, or being in the retail store is presumed to be the most successful. Like once you've done that, you've arrived. But like you said, you want to be prepared. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to, you're very conscious about what your branding is. And if you can't deliver the way that you're expected to deliver, then that could ultimately hurt your product.
Sure.
And so really carefully being patient and really carefully taking these steps, which are very thoughtful and predetermined, to use your words this morning in your blog.
Yes.
I think is important. And for people to think about not just the immediate gratification of being able to say, oh, yes, and I'm in Whole Foods and I'm in Sunflower and whatever the other Trader Joe's or whatever those other markets are, and or even some of the stores that sell the vitamins and the fitness products, that you're really being so thoughtful about this. And ultimately, I believe, will really lead to success. So being very considerate and understanding what that ultimate goal is that you want to achieve and really what the best way to get there is.
Oh, for sure. You know, I really do consider ProCakes to be a premium product with premium ingredients and hopefully premium branding. And I am not prepared at this point to let go of that and become a mass distributed product. And not to say that there's anything wrong with mass distribution. It's great if that's what your vision is. Not entirely sure that's what my vision is.
Oh, I see. So, okay. Well, it's great that you've thought about it. So now, did you do a business plan?
I did. And of course, I created it and I worked with a coach and I haven't looked at it in a little while. You know, that's not necessarily the best thing to do. Business plans are fantastic to sort of organize your mind and understand where you want to take your company. But the day-to-day, I am very intentional with my day-to-day. I do pre-plan what I do in a day, but every day doesn't necessarily roll up to my business plan because new things come on the horizon all the time.
Yeah, new challenges. So what has been the most challenging about launching this product?
Oh, my goodness. What has been? You know what the most challenging thing for me is, to be quite honest? Building something that I believe in, that is, has no compromise. So my husband, who obviously has a big influence in the company, he's a business guy through and through. And he loves the product, but he's not a health nut like me. And for me, my integrity around ingredients was a big thing. So he really pushed for adding egg whites to the mix, because then you can kind of work with just add water and it's done. And, you know, that's great if that's the direction you want to go in. And sure, it's easier on the consumer end to just add water, but there's a huge compromise for some taste. You know, I've experimented with a lot of different formats, and I just found that the more processed food you put on the dry side, the less quality that came out on the prepared side. The other piece of it was just kind of the ethics around doing a dried egg, like dried eggs, and putting that in the ingredients. I just didn't feel comfortable with it. And some of the other filler flours, let's say, that he had suggested, maybe, you know, you want to consider these things to bring the price point down, because margins in the food industry are really, really tight. I couldn't do that. So there was constantly an internal battle of being somebody who's high integrity when it comes to food and nutrition versus somebody who wants to build a viable and scalable product. And those two things, I find in the food industry, are sometimes where people get they get stepped up. And it's the same with, you know, artists versus business people, and let's say, you know, yoga teachers versus business. You've got to be good at your craft and good at what's important to you and you're passionate about, but you also have to balance that with what's you know, viable from a cost perspective. So that has been my struggle, and I'm proud to say that I haven't had to compromise on ingredients, and I won't compromise on ingredients, which is why I'm taking that retail step very, very, very carefully.
I think that's really huge, very, very important. And you've brought up so many great points about staying true to the ingredients that you wanted to be in this product, so that it truly represented who you are and was a very authentic product that is coming from you. Also about resourcing your products and recognizing that, like you said, a tsunami in the Philippines may very well affect some of the products that you're using to go into this, and being able to be flexible and not have to have your company be completely ruined because you're relying on one person, whether it's in the labeling that you have or even the ingredients. So knowing that you can at least maybe source these from someone else if you had to, and yet still stay true to who you are and the ingredients that you want in here. And so those are really great things to consider. And also the research, didn't really think about how, you know, that family recipe that you have, or even one that you've created on your own, really translates into the commercial market.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, you think that, oh, I'll just keep whipping up a batch of this over and over, but it's not quite that easy. There's a lot that goes into it. And I assume that a lot of the information that you got came from either Googling or just talking, like I said, just talking to other people who had food products, and even being with like-minded people, whether it's working at a trade show where other people are able to share ideas, and being open enough to ask and eager enough to learn.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think that has been one of the number one things that has helped me is connecting with other people in the food industry. There's a really knowledgeable person that I've worked with who's specific to small food businesses that's been extremely helpful. There's a couple of groups in Southern California. There's a women in the food service industry community, and they've been helpful. But even more so, there's the Fine Food Group of Southern California. They put on all kinds of events, like learning events and whatnot. I spent a weekend. Actually, you turned me on to the food business weekend at Chapman University. So there's lots of opportunities to learn, especially online and also through local universities, about the nuances of the food business. And again, if you don't know what you don't know, you can make a lot of mistakes. So the more you can talk to other people and just get feedback from other people on, you know, how did you get into the store, or what co-packer did you use, or, you know, how did you get your gluten-free certification? Those sort of things. Yeah, you can find anything through Google, but when you have somebody out there who's had the experience before and can tell you, this is what you need to do and this is what you want to avoid, that is incredibly, incredibly invaluable. And I just find that everybody in the food industry is just so incredibly approachable and cool and lovely.
And helpful.
My gosh. So I'm so grateful for that. I'm not sure where I'd be without that.
That's fantastic. Well, what is... How do you get motivated every day to get up and do this?
I'll tell you something. I keep a certain portion of my closet with office attire in it, all my suits and stuff like that. And every time I look at them, I get like the little bit of the heebie-jeebs, because the idea of going back to corporate breaks my heart. So for me, a big part of it is I'm going to bust my tush so that I don't have to do that again. Because for me, one of my biggest values around work is autonomy and passion and doing what I love. And I am doing that, and I'm not going to stop. This is something that I feel very passionate about, and it works to my creative side. It works to my, or it speaks to my, what I find is important. So, you know, come hell or high water, this is what I'm doing. So that's my motivation.
That's great. Well, I think I love that you have that in your closet to remind you every day.
Yeah.
And so whether it's whatever it is, we all need that to it's kind of your why.
Yeah. You can either look at it as I've got something positive to look at, and people are programmed very differently. Some people are motivated by a positive, I want to get to this spot and I want to be that person. And other people are motivated by negative, I don't want to go back there. And definitely that's what, for me, that's what my motivator is.
That's great. I love it. What's the toughest part of what you're doing?
Being a party of one at this point, and that's going to change. Having to be everything from shipping and receiving to some degree, QuickBooks and all that horrible stuff, finances. And also being, you know, the social media person and the marketing person and the branding person. So I'm at a point now where it's time to bring on resources and help and get the word out. I'd say that's the hardest part. I'm working 100% of the time. And if I'm not, I'm also learning. You know, I'm learning about the industry. I just finished my personal training certification. I'm devoted to being a lifelong learner in every aspect of what I find interesting and passionate about. So finding time for all of that and then trying to have a life on top of it, that has been very challenging.
So I want to talk about what some of your greatest strengths are and how you're utilizing those in your business. But would you say that you are wearing all the hats, and in addition to that, you are a lifelong learner, I know, and learning and taking classes to become certified. Are you incredibly organized? Do you break up your day and like...
Have you met me?
I'm trying to share with our listeners. from 9 to 10, I do this from regimented, maybe.
You know, I learned a great trick, and this is when you and I were doing Ladies Who Launch, and we had, I think her name is Jennifer Grant. I can't remember her name. Yeah, Jennifer Grant. Anyway, she's a business coach, and she came and she did a presentation to our group. And one of the things that she said that I thought was a magnificent tip, and I use it to this day, is that I do batch work. So, for example, I just finished my certification last week. But prior to that, I was spending at least 10 hours a week on my studies, as well as, you know, about 60 hours a week on my business. And then I was doing some other business training that I was putting at least 10 hours a week into. So that's a lot.
And you're a girl who absolutely makes sleep a priority.
Oh, yeah. 9-10 hours a day. That is my secret to life. So sleep and then all of these other things. And I work out every single day. Well, maybe not every single day, but most days I work out. So I would batch like things together. And that's what she said to do. And it's been incredibly helpful for me. Because the thing is, it takes your brain a little bit of time to warm up to whatever activity you're going to be doing. And then you kind of get into this space of where you're just kind of, you're in the groove and you're coasting. And then to stop that abruptly and move on to something entirely different is not a productive way to work.
It takes your brain to recalibrate.
Right. Especially the older you get, the longer it takes to recalibrate. So I found that I found if I could organize myself in the way that, okay, I'm going to do pro cakes Monday through Sunday, but I'm going to take Thursday and Saturday off. And on those days, I'm going to do my studies for my two other courses. And I would do them for the whole day. Like literally, I would sit down in the morning, crack a textbook, and that would be me till 10 o'clock that night. With a few breaks in between for other things. But I found that that was really helpful for me to do, to batch things together. And now that my schedule's opened up a little bit more, it's now kind of almost 100% pro cakes, but I am about to start on another nutrition certification. And I'll continue to break that. I'll break 1 or 2 days off a week and just focus on that other thing. So I find that's a really helpful tip.
Yeah, no, that is great. I think they talk about that in the 4-hour work week book.
Which
I haven't read yet. It's on my agenda, but so many people have recommended it. It's definitely on my agenda. All right, so by 2015, I will have read that book.
All right, hold me to it.
But no, that is a very key component, I think. So what is your greatest strength, and how are you applying that in your business?
Well, I would say that my biggest knowledge space comes from my experience in food and nutrition. And that's really where my passion is. And from there, how that has manifested itself in the past 5 years is the food blogging, which I have, through that, I've kind of developed a voice in my writing, but I've also developed some photography skills and obviously some culinary skills as well. And those things have all benefited me in my business and also my social media skills. So I think that all of those sort of encompass my greatest strengths, really sort of the creative piece around getting the message out. And, you know, I had to think about that for a minute because even though it is my greatest strength, it sometimes is really just still very hard to think, what am I going to say today? How am I going to be engaging? How am I going to connect with my audience today in a way that seems authentic and not pushy and not salesy, that I'm offering something of value? And I'm also very critical of my writing and everything that I put out there. So it is my greatest strength, but it's also my greatest nemesis to continue to be a creative voice behind the company.
And you do have a great blog. Can you tell everyone what the name of that blog is?
Yes, I have a blog called The Fit Habit. It's sort of a supportive sister to Pro Cakes in the sense that I speak to my audience through this blog that's not really related to the brand itself, but does pass people through to the brand. I get a lot of my traffic on Pro Cakes from my blog. And my blog is also my connection to my community of fellow fitness and health bloggers. You know, the relationships I've made in that space has been invaluable, not just for me as a person and as a fitness enthusiast, but also in terms of people just rallying around me to support my brand. So, and people that are relevant to my ideal customer avatar. So that has just been incredible and really speaks to the nugget of wisdom that I took from one of my teachers in India, that, you know, if you just do the work that you're passionate about, if you just do it every day, something will roll out of it. And I really believe that had I not started this blog back in, you know, 2008, which is, you know, my current iteration of it is very different from the original one, I don't know that I would be where I am today. But just by taking that step of doing something that I know I could do regardless of anything else every single day and build on it, relationships come from that, opportunities come from that. And as long as it's always something that's coming from your heart, I think that people will connect with that authenticity.
Yes, they do. And you are a great writer. So I also love your cute little title, and except I'm going to get it wrong. So I want you to tell us what it is. So it shows up on my news feed as...
Oh, so the subheading for the Fit Habit is the behaviors you need for the body you want. And really the idea behind the Fit Habit, it's not just about, you know.
That's not the one I'm talking about, though. Oh. I'm talking about the sweatpants. That's how it shows up.
Oh, peace, love, and sweatpants.
Yes.
That was, oh, okay, Facebook is so hard. That was my previous
but
name. See,
but and it's fun to me. I like it.
I like it, too. But I really want to change because I have like 700 people on my Facebook page. That's Peace, Love, and Sweatpants, but that's the old name of my brand. You know, now it's the Fit Habit, and
I thought it was kind of like both.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No, that was just the old brand, and it won't go away because Facebook won't
Apparently,
let me.
It won't go away. Yeah. Well,
I just think it's confusing and horrible, but oh well, life goes on.
Well, I think it speaks to who you are, and just that you are very much who you are. You all are about love and
sweatpants.
Loving, being comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, being comfortable in your own skin, being comfortable in the clothes that you wear, and being comfortable in your life,
yes.
You know, and having that, not wearing those corporate suits, you know, so that is really important.
Yeah.
But your blog is great, and if anybody can check that out, you'll love reading Karen's words of wisdom. I forgot to tell people again if they wanted to call. We only have a couple of more minutes here, but if they wanted to call, they can call in and ask Karen a question or me. 1-800-893-9562. Were there naysayers whenever you first started doing this? Were there people going, oh my God, the food industry, seriously, a product, your pancakes are great. I like that, but... Was there anyone?
I wouldn't say there was naysayers. I had a lot of people, in my family mostly, are like, what's this pancake thing you're doing? But I wouldn't say that they were necessarily naysayers. I will say I talked to one of the founders of Wildwood. And Wildwood is a brand, a tofu company. And I got into a conversation with this guy one day because he also did, this was years ago. This is far before ProCakes. He also did consulting in the food industry because I think he was no longer part of the brand. And he said to me, if you're going to, and this was years ago when I was thinking of doing a different food product. He said to me, if you're going to start a food product, you need at least $100,000. I wouldn't even go near the food industry without $100,000. And that devastated me at the time. This was back in like 2009 because I didn't have $100,000. And I decided not to move ahead. And then I contacted another food entrepreneur, and I can't remember her name, but she had a brand called the Karma Cookie, which is no longer in business. She made a conscious decision to close that business. But she had a very different take on it, and she was like, no, I didn't start. She was young when she started her business in her early 20s, and she bought it. She started it based on her food limitations and the fact that there was very little on the market that could accommodate her food allergies. And she's just said, you know, I bust my butt every day, but I do it and I love it and I'm married to my business. And no, I didn't start with $100,000. I didn't even start anywhere near it. So she was sort of my reconfirmation that anything is possible. And to that extent, it is really ideal to have money to start a food business, and not even because you need tons of product to start off with, because as I said, that's probably not the best way to go. But you do need a lot of money in food and branding because it's a very noisy market. I have a pretty unique product. There's not a lot of companies out there that do what I do, and of the companies that are doing what I'm doing, I consider us collaborators in the sense that we're building a pretty brand new category.
Keeping people fit, but also healthy.
Protein infused baked goods. So kind of the intersection between a supplement and a comfort food. Not a lot of people are doing that. And you know, I've met some people in that market, and you know, we talk about as suppliers, and where do you get this, and where do you get that, rather than competitive. Hey, my product's better than yours. I think that. You know, we're all busy working on building a healthier community. So we collaborate.
That's great. Now, how do you measure success?
I said to myself when I was 16, living in Toronto and a blizzard cold day, I will measure success in my life by the number of days that I wear flip-flops. And to this day, I still believe that's true. And just so you know, they're not really flip-flops, but they are sandals. Because here I am in Southern California, and it's, it's barely May, and it's like over 100 degrees outside. So I grew
up in
Okay,
make everybody jealous who's listening from out of town.
Well, for me, it was all about lifestyle. And I grew up in a very cold, blizzardy, wintry place, and I hated it. I was miserable. So now that I live in the beautiful sunshine, that's success to me. I have very, very different values than the average entrepreneur, I guess. But I
think those are great values. Yeah. And it's important for us to all recognize that you got to be happy. Like you said, life is short.
Yeah.
And so you want to make what you do something that you love, something that you're passionate about, and be happy doing it. Be happy getting up every morning going, this is what I get to do.
Sure.
I think is very, very valuable. We've talked a lot about some of your beliefs and things, but we have to go. But do you have one quote, one best business advice, one thing?
Oh my gosh, you should have told me to prepare something like this. I can't speak to the verbatim the quote, but there was a quote that I saw that a fellow fitness blogger had put up on her blog the other day, and it was an Anne Quinlan quote, and it's something about, and I'm gonna butcher this, but it's something about the hardest thing to do in the world is to be who you are. That's what the crux of the quote was. And you know, it's so easy to try and people please and be a person that is accommodating to everybody else. But at the end of the day, if you're not accommodating to your own life, and if you're not really listening to what's truly in your heart, then you're not living a great life. So
stay true to you.
Stay true to you. That would be my...
Thank you so much, Karen. This has been great.
Thanks so much.